Welcome back, everyone, to the Lovely Travels podcast. I am Emma Lovell, your host, and introducing my lovely co-host, Darius.
It's me, everyone. How are you all doing? Great. That's lovely to hear.
We are going to be talking today about Japan. Konnichiwa.
The land of the rising sun.
Yes. So it's pretty fun because Darius and I both ended up going, well, actually, I went to Japan when I was two. It was actually the first country outside of Australia I ever went to. I have heaps of memories of it. I'm told it was a wonderful trip. So, you know, it really started my taste for travel. But yeah, we actually both have been there now, but we studied Japanese in year eight together. Some of us by choice, some of us not.
Yeah, I think we've told the story.
No, tell it again. It's more fun.
It's not fun at all. It just makes me relive my traumatic childhood.
I'll tell it. It's really fun. Okay. So in year seven at our high school, we did French, German, and Japanese. We did, you know, like a third of the year in each. And then in year eight, you got to choose the language that you would do. Now, you would think Darius, being a native German, would have chosen German because that might have made his life easy. But no, alas, dear listeners, he wanted the challenge, wanted to challenge himself. Slash, he was...
Objection, Your Honour. That is not how the story goes.
He was a tad forgetful and a tad late.
I didn't hand in the piece of paper which said I wanted to do German and got bumped to the reject class of three people who wanted to do Japanese and 20 of us who didn't have a choice.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, there was like at least a solid 20 of us. But yes, French, out of 150 students, French and German were definitely the popular ones. But, you know, we had a good time in our Japanese class. We learnt all the characters and some wonderful books we had. But, Nihongo desu nan desu ka?
Watashi wa Darius desu. Yoroshiku onegai shimasu.
どうぞ。すごい。すごいですね。すごい。
丸を閉めてください。
So, if you speak Japanese and you're listening, I hope that we are not insulting you greatly with our memories of Japanese. So, but it was actually like funny when I went in 19, I guess if I was almost two, it would have been 1989. And then my second trip was in 2008. And I was surprised by how much I could remember. And when I was speaking with, I went for a conference with my dad and I was quite surprised, how much I could remember. And somebody would say something, and I'd say, oh, you just said something like this. And they were like, oh, you speak Japanese. And I was like, chisai.
Small. Chisai.
Easier if you say things with emphasis. It makes you remember them.
Yeah. It's looking back, you know, it's a crying shame. I didn't pay more attention or wasn't more motivated in Japanese class.
It's funny that it's such a popular one in Australia because, like, I don't know about your primary school, but, like, we did it in year three and then we did it again in year five. And then, so that's for me, I had already had a taste of it. Yeah, I always remember Ichi, ni, san, chi, go,
roku,
hachi,
nana,
shichi, kyu, nana, hachi. I always remember. I don't remember. Terrible.
Actually, speaking of hachi, getting shichi. A taste for Japanese, fun Darius fact, it was actually the first solid food that I ate.
Oh.
Sushi, yeah, in a sushi bar here in Düsseldorf.
Oh, no way. Like your mum took you or your dad took
you? Yeah, mum and dad took me and it's the first solid food that I ate as a baby.
Yeah, there you go. And that is a good Darius fact.
Made an impression because I could eat sushi every day or some sort of rice and seaweed and fish combination.
See, and whereas like, so when we were studying, so we were in year eight. We all got to go to a restaurant So all the French students went to a French restaurant, all the Germans to a German restaurant. We went to a Japanese restaurant, and I struggled. It was the first time. Japanese wasn't as prominent food in Australia at the time. Like now there's sushi shops are like everywhere and crazy. Like, and they don't have sushi shops. That's the funny thing. Like, we have all these little, like, the sushi rolls, and in some countries they wouldn't have it either, but we have these little kiosks everywhere that you can get sushi or sashimi, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And even in Japan, you would think that we got that idea from them, but you don't see that that much.
Nope, nope.
It's really interesting. So, but like my friends from actually, she'll be coming up on our Ibiza, Living the Paradise Island Life episode. My friend Anne-Marie, actually, they loved that Japanese food culture in Melbourne, in Australia, that they didn't have in the UK at all those little sushi kiosks that made them want to learn how to do it and go back and open up a sushi restaurant. Which they planned a sushi like kiosky thing, and they sort of started that, but then they ended up going into like catering with Japanese catering, and then they ended up taking that over to Ibiza, and the rest is history. So yeah,
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that really inspired them as well. But yeah, well, the first time though I went to that Japanese restaurant, the smell, I think it's the miso, like it's the soy bean that they use, it's such a strong flavor. I couldn't stand the smell of the restaurant. I liked the beef. I had yakitori beef. It was really nice. But the restaurant, I was just like, I can't do it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how Japanese culture is like become so popular around the world, or at least food culture. You know, everywhere you go is pretty much like a sushi train or like some form of Japanese restaurant. In Düsseldorf, we're quite lucky because we have quite a big population of Japanese people, and we have like a little Japanese quarter of town around the main train station in Düsseldorf. Lots of great restaurants and supermarkets and stuff. I like it a lot.
Yeah, well, actually, in the Gold Coast, we were the first place in Australia to get sushi trains, and so sushi trains here are massive. The go sushi is everywhere. It's just so easy. It's such a great thing. You're just going along, you see a sushi train, you pop in, you grab three or four plates, you can be in and out in like 10 minutes, and it's delicious, light, just so satisfying. So, but so different. Like, yeah, I was just so surprised when I actually went back to Japan that, the sushi wasn't like we had a conference, so we were served sashimi and sushi in that platter style, and it's certainly in the restaurants and things, but it's not available at like little stalls and kiosks or like having a whole place dedicated to sushi the way we have it.
Yeah, no, I like the at 7-Eleven and stuff in Japan or Tokyo, but probably the rest of Japan as well. Get like the onigiri, the rice balls wrapped in seaweed and stuff. And I guess sushi, you know, a lot of, if you're having sushi properly, and Japan is a big fan of ceremony and traditions, like it's not really a fast food, right? It's to be celebrated. Like, so maybe it doesn't really fit with, you know, quickly having some sushi, because you're probably meant to sit down and have it made for you, especially.
Yeah. So we kind of ruined that. But I loved, I don't know about you, but I loved in Japan that every restaurant, my dad really remembered this like fondly and loved it when we went back, that all the restaurants, or a lot of the restaurants have in the front window all the food of the menu made out of plasticine molds. Yeah. So it's like, what do you want to eat? It's like, literally, we've made it out of, and I think they actually have full shops dedicated to those little like little egg model and a little noodle model and a little piece of sort of rasher of bacon model. And the waffle shop has, you know, the ice cream and the banana, and like, it just like literally can go up and go, I want that. And it will come out and you'll be like, well, cool, that's what I'm having.
Failing that, like a lot of the ramen places that I went to in Tokyo, because, you know, I pretty much went there to eat ramen, they have like vending machines with pictures on it. So like, even though nobody speaks English in the shop, you can still get fed Because all your main interaction is with a machine.
Yeah. Oh, and the vending machines were spectacular. I remember going down the hallways and just, yeah, like you would
I've
be
read
like,
that every 12 meters there's a vending machine in Tokyo.
That's pretty impressive. You can have one.
I'm not sure.
But the vending machines are very like eclectic, you know. So you're like, I need an iced coffee. I'd like an energy drink. But I would also like a pair of underwear and a razor.
And a razor and perhaps a watermelon.
Yeah. All in one. Because that's the things you might need in your hotel corridor. No, I really enjoyed that. But I must say that in Tokyo I was a bit naughty. And we were at the conference, but we were there for 5 days. I think 3 out of the 5 nights we ended up at TGI Fridays.
Oh, no.
But it was awesome because it was like Japanese TGI Fridays and like all the staff were like over the top kind of anime dressed.
Yeah.
Like they had like all the buttons and all the crazy hair and all that sort of stuff. And one
I remember
night,
walking past it. Yeah, sorry.
One night we pretended it was my dad's birthday and then we got like the free sundae and they sang to us. We were just regulars in there and I was just like, we are the worst tourist people, but like we had a lot of other traditional culture at the conference, I promise, that we went out to TGI Fridays and yeah, it was fun.
Wow, but Tokyo is such an amazing city. I had so much fun there. I can't wait to go back.
Yeah, it's impressive. Like,
there's so much to do, being the largest metropolitan region in the world. It's mental. Like, yeah, 36 million people.
Did you get to the Shibuya Crossing?
Of course.
So the Shibuya Crossing is that famous crossing that everybody's seen, like basically sort of that iconic picture of Tokyo where the road is clear, or goes clear for a second, and then all the people come, and then it goes clear for a second, and then the cars go. But it's like this massive, like, six-way intersection, and there's all these big billboards, like, wait a minute, digitized billboards.
Neon signs and stuff.
And so it's just like this sort of very quintessential city scene. And you literally go there, like, we got the train there, crossed the road a couple of times, took some photos and left. Like we didn't want to do anything in Shibuya. We just wanted to like cross the road.
Yeah, it's a very sort of like downtown sort of working office area. Like it's not particularly nice, but it has that iconic crossing. Some good ramen spots as well. I can't remember the names.
Gee, just ramen tour of Tokyo.
Yeah. I probably ate like, I was there a week, I probably ate like 10, 12 bowls of ramen.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of ramen, but it's very tasty.
I was going to say something about sushi before. When I was in Tokyo, I went to the fish markets, the Tsujiki fish markets, and they have this thing where you can, if you get there early enough, you can watch the tuna auction.
I had heard about the fish market, yeah.
Yeah, and the
tuna auction. That's 4:30 though, something silly.
Yeah, it's really early, really early, which is like an experience in its own, like getting the first sort of train in Tokyo, the first subway, pretty much by yourself, and everything's dark and everything's quiet. And you get there and it's like this industrial area where the fish market is, and then you somehow manage to get into the tuna auction, and then it like... It only takes like 30 minutes and they sell like millions of dollars worth of tuna. And then I went for breakfast there's a lot of restaurants like tacked onto the fish market and had probably the best bowl of shirashi I ever had, which is like sushi rice with the fish on top.
I was going to say, what is that?
Yeah, yeah. Famous, favorite way to eat it. And that was just amazing. Like the freshest fish you can probably get. And it was breakfast. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning eating shirashi for breakfast in Tokyo. It was quite an experience.
That is very cool. Yeah, I had been told about that and I did not wake up early. I was like, they're like, do you want to come? And I was like, no, I really don't. Thank you.
I did it twice because the first day I went, it wasn't open.
Oh, no. That's the worst.
So I got a very early start that day for no good reason at all.
I hope you had a nap.
I can't remember. So much, so much to do, so much to see.
Who were you there with?
My girlfriend at the time.
Huh. Was that on like on a way back or to, or did you just go from here for a...
No, no, no. So the infamous trip back to Germany where we did 6 weeks of traveling and visited a whole bunch of places, that was somewhere in the middle of that.
Ah, there you go. How long did you have in Tokyo?
A week.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Look, yeah. You need a bit of time. Like, I would love to, and yeah, like I've been twice to Japan and just to Tokyo. So, yeah, I went, as I said, for a conference, but there's so many places I would love to go. I'm dying to get over there and get skiing. I love skiing. And from Australia, it's very affordable to go skiing. I think my husband has been twice skiing there, at least once. I think Nagano is where they had the Olympics, but it's Hakuba. And there's another N place that's like they're the two popular places. And like, yeah, just like anywhere, a bunch of Aussies are there. but they just say like, you know, it's that culture thing as well. So the snow is epic, it's deep powder and stuff like that. And then, but also just, you know, sort of going out, having like beers and the sake and like the food in the night, and just the little towns are very lovely. So, oh God, what's the other one? Starts with there. It's not, because Nagano was the Olympics. It'll come to me like the end of the episode. Anyway, dying to do that. The other place I really would love to get to is Mount Fuji.
Fuji-san.
And I'd love to be there at the time of the cherry blossoms. That would be beautiful. But I heard from my friend, our mutual friend Marika, that just as a tip for people, anyone who has children, probably not the best place with small-ish children. My parents took me when I was 4 and 2. I was 2, my brother was 4. But, you know, that wasn't for us, and we were only there for a couple of days. She had, her children would have been like 1 and 4 and 6. And she said just like Japan's kind of like that very like beautiful, like very like you go and look at a temple, or you go and look at like, you know, the temple sort of structures and the beautiful gardens but that's not really like, children can't do a lot with that. So
yeah.
And so maybe either when they're very little, like when we were, and no, we don't really need that much to interact with, or maybe once they're like over 10 and they kind of can understand and appreciate the culture and what they're seeing, that middle bracket is, she said, there just wasn't that much for the kids to do. And there's a lot of places like you're more quiet. And
yeah, I was going to say, like, I think, you know, a big part of Japanese culture is like perfection and respect and stuff like that. And like, if you don't want to be an oafish tourist, like, you got to show that respect, and little kids just might not understand or not be interested, which is fine. But like, yeah, I think, yeah, you need discipline.
But it's like good to know. It's just like, okay, cool. Well, maybe not the destination we take them, you know, like doesn't mean you can never go with kids. It just means like it's sort of an age appropriate trip.
Sure.
And I know that like sometimes some kids love sushi and stuff like that, and some kids, the food can be quite particular. So if they're not into that food, then
not actually that much sushi available.
Yeah. So if they like, you know, if they don't like rice and noodles and kind of like thin cuts of beef and, like, you know, thinly flavored meats and stuff.
Like, you need to evaluate your parenting choices.
Beautiful food, but yeah, that I think if you've got a little fussy eater, you're going to have a bit of a trouble. Anyway, neither of us have kids, so it doesn't matter. We'll go back.
No.
But just for so we have covering the broad range of listeners that we have.
Japan has such a low birth rate that there are more adult diapers sold than baby diapers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So maybe they just don't have like a children-focused infrastructure because there's just no demand.
Well, there definitely is that, like, yeah, that sort of, and I will, we do plan to have, we'll be talking to someone from Japan on this episode. You know, it's a very fascinating culture, and there is a lot of, like, respect. There's a lot of dignity. There's a lot of, I guess, ritual and things like that. So very for some people, they can find that restrictive. But I mean, there's things that work amazingly in Japan because of that, like very efficient, very technologically advanced. They are respectful.
Take a lot of pride in their work. It doesn't matter what it is. Like they're you know, from like someone who I guess empties garbage bins to, you know, someone who builds computers. There's this really high level of pride in your work and getting perfect at what you do. Like, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and just how beautiful, the food, the presentation, like a bento box. And if, like, you know, there's been this big sweeping around the world of Marie Kondo. I'm a Marie Kondo convert myself, and the KonMari method, which is like the folding and that everything has a place and having a tidy home, and that they do this cleaning and they're like, you can't clean if it's not tidy. And so you have to do this proper cleaning, and it's part of the culture. Like, everybody at this like certain time of year does this deep cleaning of the house. And so, you know, this preciseness. And she said, like, the bento box is like the perfect example of the Japanese culture, how you have this box of four and you have these little foods that each fits in, and it's so beautifully presented. And each thing has its little place. You know, even that, the way it comes to you, it's so well designed. And the way the dress, like the kimono, like it's like a gift, like it's like a beautiful gift wrapped thing. And you just find that when you're there, yeah, things are presented very beautifully and kept very immaculately.
Yeah,
and that's very admirable to the Western world. It's quite funny that we get on so well, Australians and Japanese, because we're quite opposite in our cultures, and maybe that's opposites. Why.
That's right.
Like, we're very laid back, very relaxed, don't really care about rules. Just do what you want. You can go over there. That's fine. But I loved, I don't know if you ever had them, but in primary school and in high school, we had Japanese exchange students, and we a couple of times hosted the Japanese exchange students, and they were they give the best gifts. There's beautiful, like, you know, the origami paper, and just, it's very gift culture. Like, presenting a gift to your host is very important. They're just very sweet, very interested. Wonderful guests, very, very neat. But, you know, we loved that fun of picking up words from them and then helping them with their English. So if that program still runs, by all means, I would so encourage it. It's so lovely having someone come and stay in your home and getting to learn about their culture directly from them and your culture with them.
Yeah, it's such a great way to almost travel without having to leave your home, because you just bring someone else's culture to your house.
Yeah. So, played dressing up in kimonos, played gifting, and I think a couple of times they cooked for us and things like that. And it was really fun. I have very fond memories. Yeah, back to Tokyo. I guess my favorite places that I remember, I loved Harajuku. Mm-hmm. Harajuku Market has become famous. Anybody who like knows the Gwen Stefani, when she came out with her Harajuku Girls.
Don't know what you're talking about.
When Gwen Stefani relaunched like her career on her own, her solo career, she had Harajuku Girls in all of her videos and on her albums, and they had that. So that Harajuku style, even though there was a little bit of it in the Western culture, it became quite famous in Western culture. And so that was around that time I went there, and I was like, I have to go to Harajuku. And so it's this little, it's an area, but this market area is very famous, and it's where all those people dress up in anime. And so you'll see this girl dressed up like a doll. but like it's giant blonde hair, massive shoes, little tiny dress. Cosplay
and stuff like that.
Yeah, they just, and so just like characters walking around, and I went into one shop and it was like Alice in Wonderland type style. It was kind of creepy. Like all the mannequins had rabbit heads, and the whole shop had like grass on the ground, and just like they love a theme. And a lot of themed restaurants. I hadn't gone when this was the craze, but now there's all like the cat cafes. There's like an owl cafe. There's a hedgehog cafe, puppy cafe.
Wow. Imagine if they like all got together, it would just be like massive shit fight of animals.
Chasing each other around. But yeah, apparently that's the thing to do now. But yeah, Harajuku was great for shopping. And I'm struggling. I've been Googling it, but I'm just going to say it was right near Harajuku, in the Harajuku area. There was a beautiful gardens we went to and had all those like sort of stone sculptures. And
I think the for me, like remembering where stuff was in relation to each other in Tokyo is super hard because it's a massive city and like super like public transport. You get on, it takes you somewhere at 1,000 miles an hour, and then you're like, oh, this must be just like two stops, but you might be on the other side of town. Like,
yeah, and it's very like, yeah, you, if you know where you want to go, you find it on the subway map or the metro map. And like, yeah, super easy to get there. Yeah, we found using the train really easy. But yeah, like you say, I think a lot of the stops look familiar too. So you'd sort of come out, you'd be like, the sign says I'm in the right place. So
yeah,
I guess we're here. And so, yeah, and I think sort of in my memory, the garden is right next to Harajuku Market entry, but maybe
I don't know.
But I liked that day very much. And I have a photo I'll put up from that. Someone might be able to, somebody, if you know and you're listening and you know what I'm talking about, please write to me.
The correct guest will get 1,000 lovely traveler points.
To be used at the time when we work out what they worked out to be. But the thing that the other thing I loved, I don't know if this is the right thing, but I think it is. So we also went to Asakusa, which is like the temple area, and that was so impressive. And it was kind of special when I went there because my dad had taken me there when I was two. And so for him, that was kind of like the one of the places that he really remembered taking us, and then going back there with me as an adult was like really special for him. And I mean, it's super impressive, like big red facade, beautiful, like intricately designed. And they had this like food market, like stall out the front, like a bunch of food stalls out the front. And I tried these things. They were like, there's probably like the actual name for it. I could type it in, but octopus balls.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like,
I want to say okonomiyaki, but I'm not sure.
Okay, you Google it while I'm talking about it. But they are like, yeah, balls of sort of pastry-ish, and then they have like a sauce in the middle and octopus as well in there. And yeah, I think you get like four.
Anyway, takoyaki.
Oh, takoyaki. Okay.
Okonomiyaki is the
pancake.
Like the pancake.
Yeah, which is very good.
Oh, I should not be looking at pictures of food right now. Oh my god.
Okonomiyaki, yes. I like the Japanese pancake. But the takoyaki. How do you say? Takoyaki. I had that. And check your temps, guys. Check your temps, because I've been into that thing and it was like octopus and lava coming out, and my mouth was just scalded by this like scorching hot street food. So yeah, if you buy street food, check your temps. And
it's also like being hungry and like not caring. It's just like, it smells good, it looks good, I want to eat this right now. There goes the roof of my mouth.
Yeah. So that was that day kind of in a nutshell. But no, I had another fun story to tell you. It's kind of like not got much to do with Japan, but it's pretty fun because it's tied to me being in Japan.
Okay.
the Australian listeners will probably appreciate this story more. It's a travel story. So there's this famous radio host in Australia called Hamish and Andy, and I used to listen to them a lot. And I was driving home one day and they were talking on the radio about Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, had mm-hmm. been to the Australian premiere of Harry Potter. And mm-hmm. when he was there, he said he saw a girl in the crowd and it was love at first sight. And he was so in love. It wasn't me. He was so in love and he was like, had to find her. And he talked about it somewhere publicly. And they're like, you know, has this ever happened to you? Have you like fallen in love with someone at first sight, had this interaction and then tried to find them again? And I did. I had a story. So I rang up and told my story, which was that I was in London in 2006, living in London. And I went to the famous Walkabout pub and I was there with some mates. And me and this guy was like just staring at me the whole time, just like not creepy way, like just like.
Did you have food on your face?
No, just very good looking man, smoldering, looking at me, just you know, checking and going, oh. And so I was like, I've got to see what's happening, you know. So finally I go over, I'm like, you're looking at me sort of thing. And he's like, yeah. And we had a bit of a chat and sort of liked each other or whatever. And then he had to go. So I got his number. I was like, yeah, we'll talk. So, you know, I just found this guy and then went back to the table and went to write him a message and I hadn't saved the number properly.
No.
So I lost the number. So I ran out into the street looking both ways. Where is he? His name was Brad and I was pretty sure he was Australian from his accent. So
if there's any Brad from Australia listening.
I was still looking. I'm married now and I love my husband very much, but I'm still looking one day. So anyway, I was devastated. Like he was the man of my dreams, obviously. So there was this thing in London called the it's gonna escape me now. It sounds like a bomb.
It sounds like a
TNT, bomb. The TNT magazine. TNT, like, oh. It was the TNT magazine, but on the last page they had, like, community shout-outs. So I wrote into the TNT magazine and I wrote, you know, this is Emma. We met at the walkabout in Shepherd's Bush. You know, we had a real moment. I'm going to be back there on Sunday. You should, you know, come and be there and I'll see you again. Yeah. So anyway, put it in the magazine and hope for the best. But they put it in the wrong week. So I was there and then didn't come. And then they put in the shout out the week after and then I couldn't be there. So maybe he went. Maybe he went looking for me.
Brad.
So anyway, I told him and Shandy this story. They loved it. They spent the next hour of the show saying, if your name is Brad and you were in the UK in 2006, call now. And guys were calling in, or do you know a Brad who was there? And then they're like, they kept me on the line and then they'd ask me questions and then I'd, you know, and then I told them something. And I was like, look, I think he's Australian. He might be South African. And Hamish was like, Emma, you have to get the facts straight.
That's true. You do have to get this. It's like a national outcry of Brads.
So it came to the end of the show. It was like, all right, well, thanks, guys. And then the producer called me back and was like, hey, that was really fun. Like the guys really loved it. We might like keep this thing going. And I was like, oh, awesome. But like I'm flying to Japan tomorrow. So I don't know if I'll be able to take your call, but like I'll give you my dad's number. I think they got my email as well. So email is like, give him my dad's number. Call my dad. If you can't reach me, it's because my phone's off, but like call my dad's number.
Anyway, because your dad was there with you.
Because dad was going to Japan too. So.
Right.
But I think there might have been a few days lag in between this. But anyway, I was like, oh, whatever. That was a bit of fun. And, yeah, but they really loved it. And they wanted to just, like, sort of do something with it. And took a few days. But, yeah, I got to Japan. And as soon as I got there, like, got it out of the cab. And my dad's like, Emma, hurry. We need to go upstairs. He's like, hurry. We have to get to the phone. I'm like, what? What's going on? He's like, I've had a phone call. Like, you have to get to the phone. He's like, it's the radio.
It's so the radio.
I had to call. Like, I've just arrived in Japan. I've had like 9-hour flight, been in the taxi, blah, blah, blah. Now I have to call the Hamish and Andy show and talk to the producer and what they've, you know, because I was going to be there for like, I think I was there 5 days, but maybe it was longer. A week, they were like, okay, well, when you're back, we want you to come into the studio
Wow.
They want to interview you. And what they did, they got a illustrator, like a court drawer, like court artist. So the artists who go into the court and you describe, or and they sketch the person on trial, or you know, sometimes they need to like get a witness or something, and they sketch. Yeah, what
have you seen this person?
And so I had to tell him what Brad looked like. And just another fun fact, the sketch artist had actually been in the trial of Ivan Milat. So he was quite
It's not so fun, but it is fun, a fact. I'll give you that. Fact.
Very famous Australian murderer. So
yes.
He had, which meant to me that he was a pretty good artist if he was in that trial.
Just be drawing like angry smiley faces everywhere.
As I say, it's a very loose connection to Japan, but
Brad is still on the lam.
Brad is still on the loose. They ended up having a Bradgent. So after putting up the photo on the website, then they got me on another three times. They were calling me the afternoons, asking me questions, and then the person had to ring in and like they were seeing if our answers matched up. And then they ended up being like, look, we haven't found you, you're Brad, but we'll find you a Brad.
A Brad. Nice.
And they had a Bradgent as opposed to a pageant. And I think then by that point they were kind of stitching me up. And they tried to like connect me with someone, and I was like, we're not talking. But it was a very fun, weird time in my life.
Yeah. And a big shout out to your husband, Matt.
Yeah.
Great success, Hamish and Andy. Good work, guys.
I know. I feel like writing to them and being like, guys, just letting you know, like, call off the hunt, call off the search. It's okay. That was a very long-winded travel story that had a very, very loose link to Japan.
Yes.
I also bought a top in Japan that I then wore on the Hamish and Andy show. So I bought a top in Harajuku that I wore on the Hamish and Andy show. So there, see, connected.
It's all connected. Good story. I have a similar story, but it's a lot less exciting. I saw the girl of my dreams in Amsterdam. She was wearing a blue dress with white polka dots, and it was on a bike, and her hair was flowing in the wind, and the sun was like radiating her. And I'm like, oh my God. And she was gone. That was it.
I think that's called a crush, Darius.
Yeah, but it was like meant to be, you know what I mean?
Well, I don't think so, because she's gone.
Well, she didn't see me. She didn't even get a chance.
See, at least I talked to Brad. I just was really crappy at entering his digits. So for any single folk out there, make sure you both exchange numbers and double check that it's actually in the phone, because you could just, you know, I mean, look, make you won't, a lot you of won't meet your match, sads. You know, if you literally, you know. So luckily that happened, because otherwise wouldn't have met Matt, you know. Fate.
Everything happens for a reason.
We both loved Japan. I feel like we've had, this has been a very loose thread of a conversation about Japan.
A loose fit.
We've talked about people so outside much, of Japan, just a few Japanese food outside of Japan. Not so much about like the inside of Japan, but the message is that we should go back and see more.
The message is we should go back.
That's what I said. Japan is good.
Oh, my God.
Stop it. Anywho, thanks for listening. Going to just do this real quick. Email us. Email us with some of the answers to the blazers that we can't remember. That's info@lovelytravels.com.
If anybody emails us or writes us or whatever, we will talk about it.
We will.
So if you want to appear in a chat, if you have a good question, hell, we'll interview.
Yeah. We nominate yourself. Bring it out.
Nominate yourself.
Anyway, Facebook group, Lovely Travels. Search it on Facebook, Lovely Travels. Instagram, Lovely Travels. Share us your photos. Share with us your photos. Hashtag Lovely Travels. And website, learn more about us at lovelytravels.com.
That's lovely with a double L in the middle.
Means double the life.
Double the love.
Double the love. Lee.
Double the laughs.
That's it, because you're here. So next week we will be talking to a wonderful lady who is also a podcaster. She's a prolific podcaster, and she does all the things, but she also loves travels, and her name is Kate Toon. So please tune in to with Kate Toon.
Did you mean tune in?
She does that. I can't do that. Ah, that's her thing.
Damn it.
Yeah. We both have very catchy last names, so we did bond over that. All right, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Darius.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
Not yet. Bye.